Gravitas Impact offers a global community of the world's top business coaches. We strive to empower our coaches and clients alike to achieve their extraordinary goals.
Hello, everyone. This is Keith Cupp, CEO of Gravitas Impact Premium Coaches, and this is our mid-market podcast where we address real challenges CEOs and their leadership teams are experiencing as they grow their mid-market companies. Today, we have guest thought leader and author Jay Niblick, the founder of both Intermetrics and Wise Hire. A little bit more on that in a few moments. Jay, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
Okay. And Jay and I have known each other for about a decade now. And in preparation, I asked Jay to frame out a challenge that he is seeing in the mid-market with CEOs and leadership teams. So Jay, what's the challenge you want to address today?
I guess one of the things that we see most often with CEOs at this level is they've gotten too busy working in the business. And this is really the evolution where they need to get focused on working on the business. And they traditionally focus on, I believe, the wrong things. I'll make a bold statement and I'll back that up. If to you, the CEO, if people, and I mean finding, developing, and keeping the very best talent, if people aren't your absolute number one top thought each and every day, you're already losing.
Okay, now what we're going to do, we're going to come back and develop that with some detail and kind of ask the question, what gives you the right to say that? We'll get to that in a few moments, but a little bit more on Jay, listeners. So Jay is the founder of Intermetrics, Jay, you're celebrating your 20th year of Intermetrics, is that correct?
This January, made 20 years, absolutely.
Okay, in just about 30 seconds, what does Intermetrics do? What is Intermetrics?
Intermetrics specializes in psychometric assessments, behavioral analysis, and specialties like that. We've reached at this point about 1,600 consultants in, I think, 52 countries, operating with over 10,000 organizational clients and almost to the tune of 7 million employees in that work, whether that's leadership development, coaching, team building, training, those types of things.
Okay, good. And you are the author of What's Your Genius? How successful people think radically different about success. Give us a couple of sound bites on What's Your Genius.
That was a result of a study we did. Being personality assessment people, we had profiles on an awful lot of people, over 300,000 in this one specific cohort. We looked at 197,000 individuals with performance metrics, so the company's performance and the individual's level of satisfaction. And we were looking for correlations between who was the best employee and their personality. Were there traits that explained why they were always the top employee, why they outsold everybody else, why they had the lowest turnover and the most effective leaderships, so on and so forth. We found, too, that did correlate with it, wrote a white paper. Nobody, it seems, likes reading white papers except people in academia. And so the business CEOs that we deal with definitely didn't read white papers. So What's Your Genius was a book designed to tell the story behind that data of why it's important to understand those two and what seemed to correlate with all of the top performers, regardless of industry, role, or level.
Okay, excellent. So we've established audience Jay's solid background and foundation for his bold statement that, hey, as a leader in business, if you're not beginning the day and spending most of your effort and time on your people and thinking about your people, then you are already in a lost position. You're behind. Jay, develop that argument or that thought a little bit. Why is that so?
And let me preface it by saying, you know, if you've made it to this point, don't turn off because you think, oh, lordly, here is another one of those HR folks talking about love your people and emotional intelligence is this and that. While those things are important, I'm talking to CEO. As a CEO, the best thing you can do for your shareholders, and this is experiential, not in only the two companies that I've started, which are both eight-figure companies now and employing dozens and dozens of people, but also working with these 10,000 organizations around the world, it's not just a pat answer. It's not something that people say, but they really don't focus on. Where it comes from is, we're still actually practicing industrial era mindset business. And I'll challenge you to see if this is true in your organization or not. So as you're listening, tell yourself yes or no. Do you think that we still are practicing a whole lot of industrial era mindset, you know, Tayloristic, Frederick Taylor kind of management principles, the scientific principles of management? And most people like to say no. They like to say, no, we've evolved. It's 2019. Come on, we're not practicing business like we did back then. Well, if you manufacture anything, if you're the CEO of a company that makes something tangibly, what's your defect rate in that manufacturing process? I'm going to guess usually in our experience, single digit. Now, the widgets you make, 6% of them fail, 1% of them fail, 3% of them fail at manufacturing, you know, before shipping. It's usually very low. Compare that to your human turnover rate in any role in your organization. How often do people leave? Are fired or leave, voluntary or involuntary? And what's the difference in those two percentiles? And the argument would be you do a lot better job in the management of things than you do people. If your human turnover is twice as high as the times of deficit, the defects that your company makes in product, then you're not as good at managing people. And historically, we're not. Ask your finance department, your CFO, yourself, if it's you as the CEO, if you were to buy a $500,000 piece of equipment, where would you put that in your accounting practice? An expense or an investment? You would amortize it out as an investment. Your accountant better be telling you to do that. Where do you put salary and payroll? Never goes on the investment category inside your books. It's always under expense. Back to what Frederick Taylor pretty much taught in scientific principles of management. And lastly, in your organization, here's the three tests, the litmus test. In your organization, do you have a chief technology officer? Do you have a chief executive officer, a chief finance officer, a chief operating officer? Do you have a chief people officer? And most organizations will say yes. They're called the executive VP of HR. I'm not talking about HR. We're talking about humans that are running the business. 80% of the U.S. GDP is delivered by service, not manufacturing. Those are Drucker's knowledge worker, you know, all of these different concepts. So Keith, I'll let you jump in. I don't mean to hog it all, but that's why people see this and go blow it off as yeah, fine. But my challenge to you, which I'll put at the end of this, is if you truly grasped what I'm saying, you know, the concept of go find people that are smarter and more talented than you, and then get the heck out of their way. They are the most important asset. You, as an executive, would be seeking to go get a master's degree in human capital management, not an executive MBA.
Okay, Jay. Hey, this is great. So what you've brought to bear then are three kind of tests or filters for we CEOs in the mid-market. Number one, let's look at our defect rate in what we're producing, in our revenue producing product service, and then compare that to our retention or turnover rate in human capital, number one. Number two, do we look at people, and this can be more of an inner emotional item as well as an analytical item. Do I as the CEO feel that my people, they are a financial asset and an investment, or they are a liability? And fellow CEOs, when you hire somebody, what are you feeling and thinking internally about that in that area? And then third, just looking at the organization, do you have the organizational assets and resources placed in the human capital area? So Jay, let's develop this a little bit more here, go a little bit deeper. So if for a CEO or an executive team member listening, when you say, hey, people should be your first thought every day, develop that a little bit more. What should I be thinking and doing as I build my human capital executive skills and I think about my people? What would that look like on a daily basis?
You know, it involves first committing to this philosophy. The 30-year track doesn't exist hardly anymore at all. You know, it's 11 jobs on average, different companies that people are going through. So the next job promotion also means the next company for them. So the attitude towards faith and loyalty towards an organization has changed. The number of jobs and career changes that somebody is going to make has increased. You know, and I'm not just talking about the differences in bringing on millennials. everybody's working more remotely now, small teams. Business is changing to where I can't just continue to say, hey, this is the purview of somebody else. So what actions do you take? Well, first, commit to this realization. Two, look at the evidence. You know, go read. Everybody's probably already listening to this has read Good to Great. You know, Jim Collins, again, 2001. What motivates individuals is not what the industrial mentality talks about. I'll give you a good job and here's how much pay you can get. You know, it's the motivation of people today that are in intellectual jobs, service jobs. It's all performance is generated between the ears, not with my hands. So we have to appreciate that and understand it. So the first thing I always say is, you know, go out and look around and see where this stuff is. Read the Insider Advantage. So your compensation package, the product you sell compared to your competitors, how you operate your business, those are all important. But it's the humans that are utilizing those and the people that you find that are going to make those better, to execute on those strategies.
Well, let's pivot in a little bit of that direction. So what I hear you saying is mindset is the first decision of an executive. Embrace this mindset. Do your research if you need to prove it to yourself. Embrace this mindset. Now let's talk about what I call the talent life cycle. So you acquire talent, you bring talent on, you train talent, and then you optimize talent. What are some trends that are happening out there that you would like to speak to, Jay, so that CEOs are getting the right talent and then optimizing it?
I always like to say, look, there's a lot of answers to the question depending on the context you're in. What we know for a fact is if you never ask the question, you're never going to get the answer. So the first thing I always talk about with CEOs is your job is to ask yourself that question every day. In your specific industry, in your scenario, given the size of your organization, your team, your culture, who you compete with, all of that plays a factor. There's no universal answer that fits everybody. So the first answer is ask yourself that question every morning. What is it in our industry that we have to do to make sure, and I just like to refer to it as find it, develop it, and keep it. You know, that's the trifecta of talent, finding it, developing it, and keeping it. So that's going to feed off into how do we market ourselves? What's our brand? What's our employer value proposition? How do we recruit? You know, what do we offer? That's finding it, developing it. Do we insist on the best leaders? Do we accept common aspects that might be ignored in larger organizations? Are we okay with mediocrity? Are we okay with human turnover? If you want the best talent, you can't just hang a sign that says hiring and expect them to walk in the door. You have to court them. You've got to think outside the box of what's best for them. You have to accept that more often than not, 65 to 70% of the time, they're going to expect to say, what are you going to do for me to make me more valuable for my next job, which is likely to not be here. Finding talent's no different in the same aspect as it is for marketing.
Right. And so let's kind of double click down on that. So there's the brand promise, which faces the market or prospective clients. And you used a term a few minutes ago, the employer value proposition, which is the value proposition to prospective talent, as well as talent in the house to retain it. Discuss that that employer value proposition a little bit more. And if you have any examples to share, that would be great.
I think UVP or USP. So most CEOs come up at least in some aspect in sales. And so they're familiar with, or sales and marketing, they're familiar with the unique value proposition, you know, as you're talking about, the unique sales proposition. They lose that attitude when they go into hiring. They don't see it that way. It's not an equal match. So you can't go out and examples being organizations that say, here's a very bland job description. We're going to give you, here's 20 bullets of what we would like you to do. We're going to interview you. You're not going to interview us. And we're not really looking to make a great match. It's here's a job. Here's a nice culture. But the majority of the interest is on them making sure that you're a good fit for us as a company. are you going to be the best employee for us? And usually the minority is on, are we going to be great for you? And it tends, again, focus around benefits and money. WiseHire, my organization, we have unlimited paid time off. We have employees, they don't have time on the calendar. We're a completely virtual organization. I had a call with 28 people this morning. One was in Singapore, one was in Thailand, one was in Germany, I believe, and the rest were spread across the country. So they're working this week. They just happened to be sitting at a cafe in another country, still working. So that gives them, you know, an example of the freedom to go where they want to go and still be able to work and have a lifestyle that they want with unlimited paid time off. Now, it's scary to think about, but it works.
And Jay, on that, how do you measure success with someone with unlimited time off and freedom to do what they need to do? What are your metrics, or how do you make sure that they are being successful for the company?
And this is a good example of scientific management principles, and Frederick Taylor would teach you to tightly constrain these individuals. How often are you at your desk? I'm incentivizing the wrong behavior. Mm-hmm. How often are you clocked in? How many hours did you work? Again, if I'm manufacturing and the value of this employee is for the physical product and work that they do, this does have to be a little different. But the majority of employees are more valued. We're in Drucker's intellectual economy. It's performance that's based on what's happening between their ears, not between their fingers. And so we evaluate them based on milestones and objectives, not hours put in. So we say, here's the quality of the product that we need you to produce. We use an NPS score. I'll give you an example. Our hiring coaches are the support factor for our organization, and they're coaching to these individual business owners that use WiseHire to help them make better hires. We use the NPS score, Net Promoter Score. Every customer is asked at multiple times in the relationship on a 0 to 10 scale. Technically, it's a 1 to 1, as negative 1 to a positive 1 scale, how likely they would be to promote our services because they were satisfied, they were happy, and they can make comments. That's something that we use to say, how are you guys performing as a team? We don't look at how many hours were they online. We don't look at who was here and who was what. Those tasks obviously have to be managed. You still have to manage things, but you lead people. And so that's a great example of having that Net Promoter Score is a great indicator on what we really care about. All the reasons we want them there on those hours and doing those things is because we want the customer to be extremely satisfied. So by letting the customer tell us if they're satisfied, it was actually, I forget the author, but the ultimate question, Net Promoter, the ultimate question 2.0.
Fred Reichheld.
Reichheld, thank you. So those are the things that we focus on. And only if that is or isn't working are we going to go in and say, okay, let's see if this is a problem. And yes, there may be an opportunity for individuals to abuse that system, but that's where, you know, with unlimited paid time off. But we look at that and say, hey, if you're not hitting the results that we want, not the activities, we guide you in the activities, but we're measuring results.
Excellent example. So unlimited time off for your company is what you live. You're walking the talk. And then the Net Promoter Score focused at the team member is your leading metric, which is a results-based metric. Let me share with the audience too, Jay, and then I want to begin to move towards what are some solutions, resources, and tools for CEOs and executive teams. Then we'll bring our podcast to a close. But what we're seeing in the market too is five things to consider as a company develops their employee value proposition, their USP to employees or team members. Number one is market your culture. Underlying, you got to have a great culture. Number two, your core values. Number three, your purpose. What is the purpose, underlying purpose of your organization? Number four, are you a learning organization investing in the learning and the development of your people, their knowledge, using the knowledge worker paradigm you mentioned? And then lastly is just like clients are your best advocates, your existing team members that are successful, happy, and thriving are your best advocates too as you reach out into the market. Any comment on those, Jay, before we turn to what are some resources for CEOs?
No, I think they're all very good. And absolutely the best, all the polls show that the best way to find that new talent is in your existing talent.
Absolutely. And often that's driven by the purpose of the company, the greatness of the culture, and the ability to employ to actualize. Hey, Jay, let's turn briefly to resources. So we like the podcast to be very practical. You're a CEO, executive team member out there, and you're kind of scratching your head and say, hey, what are some resources? What should I do with this? What would you advise them?
Three things. Examine what you do as the CEO and ask yourself, honestly and truly, am I the CTO? Am I really the chief talent officer, not technology? Is that my responsibility? If not, I challenge you to ask yourself, if you believe this, if you go out and read the Marshall Goldsmiths and the Daniel Pinks and the Jim Collinses and, you know, read the Michael Blooms and Porters, if you can't say honestly that you can, then you need to do two things. Start outsourcing tasks that are not as important as the acquisition and development and retention of talent. Finding absolutely the smartest and best people to come into the organization. It's a multiplier. It's what allows us to reach 100% growth every year after year that we've been in the business. 100% growth, because the talent is the absolute multiplier. Outsource those things that aren't related to that. Lean on managers, lean on CTOs, COOs, CFOs. Put more of them in charge of that and insource more responsibility, get more involved, be the person who's the final decision on making any hire in your organization, or at least in the upper 75% of it. Get more involved in not allowing those things to be outsourced to somebody else. And number three, so insource, outsource, and number three, find a coach, find a consultant. There are fantastic business coaches out there who specialize in all of these aspects. And if it's not a bench strength inside your organization or for you, then find one. They have to be very practical. They have to be highest quality. Find someone that's proven and will gladly show you proof that they've worked with other organizations of your size and for people that demand the highest of quality. And let them come in and help you understand how very specific activities could be taken, but to help guide you. Marshall Goldsmith's favorite quote, and then I'll shut up. It's not about understanding the practice of management, and in this case, the practice of becoming the chief talent officer. It's about learning how to practice that understanding. The knowledge is out there, but a great coach will help you practice that understanding, not just gain the knowledge.
And we see that with our in our community among on the front lines, Jay, is knowledge is prevalent, but execution by implementing and practicing what is learned is the gap to close. Jay Niblick, thank you so much. Audience, Jay Niblick, founder of Intermetrics, Wise Hire, author of What's Your Genius. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
For more valuable content and actionable resources, visit www.gravitasimpact.com.